Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends. Coming to you live on June 2nd, this is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show radiating from the beehive of creativity, civic engagement, historic significance, and cultural awareness known formally as the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon broadcast studio in the bustling and bodacious heart of our venerable island community. That was the voice of our late founder, Brian Brown. From the verdant shores of Vachon Island, our venerable and virtuous band of Brieflies venture valiantly into a vibrant and voracious review of current events, keeping Brian's brilliant flame alive through weekly episodes of extremely intelligent discussion laced with humor and empathy, always guided by Brian's mantra, less is more, more or less.
That was more alliteration, not less.
That was more.
True.
That was more. That was impressive.
You're pushing our luck with extremely intelligent.
That's right. We need to venture forward, you know, boldly, gentlemen
there
and
you
ladies.
Go. There you
so
go.
Okay, mm-hmm. Here we are. Hey, our Briefly panel, you heard several of them, but one of them was control board magician, Vachon Airport Commissioner, treetop flyer, partially reformed Texan who mellowed in Montana before landing on Vachon. Truman O'Brien's here.
Good morning. I am here.
How's the big blue switch?
It is really cool. I am sold on this new system. It's great. I just am dying to get the new mics up for you guys. So that's what's going to be cool.
As I sit here and look over your left shoulder, there's lights flashing. There's like dial indicators moving back and forth.
There's all kinds of stuff happening. Man.
Top notch.
It's magic. Just
awesome.
Magic.
Does it improve the quality of the shows?
Well, it does. You know what? The sound quality is better.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
It is. Yeah,
well,
you can hear
step.
It.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just deal with the content.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, we said that the stations that you guys are on are called the talent stations.
Oh, really?
And our tech guy says, now all we need is some talent.
Yeah, exactly. Got a station.
Yeah, we got the station.
Let's do our best.
There you go.
All right. Hey, you heard the voice of historian, professor, sportsman, guardian of the galaxy and clean water advocate, also party animal, frequently seen on his floating man cave, the Vachona, Bruce Hallman.
That's why we own boats, isn't it?
You know, that's
it's
it.
Like, hey, you got to have somewhere to put your time and energy and treasure. A boat can't
supply all of that, doesn't it?
Right. And sometimes solace and serenity.
There you go.
Sometimes. Hey, legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, high fashion women's shoe salesman, Pinkerton guard, occasional coupe vocalist, and aspiring guitar player, Craig Bellis is with us here today.
I'm happy to be here, as always.
Absolutely.
Oh, it makes my voice sound better, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's
it's
what I'm
better
doing.
All the time. Better all the time. Hey, we also have part-time Politico affordable housing advocate, ferry fixer, Vachon Island Fire and Rescue Commissioner, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer's here.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
You're looking very, really dapper this morning.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know what it is.
It's the button.
Is it the button?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
Yeah, I'm all the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in my 85-degree weather shirt
that's
here.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's coming today. Huh?
It's the
yeah.
formal versus informal.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we're going to television, so you know. We're all going to have to spiff up here a little bit.
Brave new world.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, just in case you might have forgotten, I'm mariner, backpacker, climber, cyclist, organizer, and rower Kevin Jones, also known as Troublemaker.
Good trouble.
Glad to be here as well. Well, before we jump right into the news of the day, in our usual lighthearted but passionately serious fashion, let's first check in with the Brieflies about how things are going. Truman, could you start us off?
Well, yeah, I had a couple of really fun things. On Friday, I went to the opera. Hansel and Gretel, and it was spectacular. I just can't tell you how great it was. The set, you know, we had them on the folks, the set designer and the stage director and the head of the music group. The orchestra was phenomenal. I mean, absolutely phenomenal. The voices were, I mean, the woman who played Gretel was just amazing, just phenomenal. And then on Saturday. Saturday. I was thinking, went to the Heritage Museum's fundraiser. Gala, that's it. 1970s. And you looked awesome, Craig. You and Lynette were right in those pants. Don't ever wear those again.
I'll give them back to the 1980s couch I got them from.
Oh, yeah, that's what they look like. Yeah, they were velour, weren't they? They were purple velour or something. Yeah, they were amazing. But we sat at Bruce's table, and it was really fun. The food was good. The man, Jeff Hoyt, you know, he always does a great job. But he looked at 250 beachcombers. And came up with this list of headlines that were hilarious. They were, you know, they were just really funny. But anyway, that was my 2 days this week. Had a great time.
Okay, you went to the Friday Hansel and Gretel opera.
I did.
Ticket. So you did get your tickets in time because there was some question.
Yeah,
you know.
I got those. The matinee on Sunday was sold out.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just slipped in there and got it. It was a tough decision. Joe Jinx, who's one of our favorite singers, was playing on the island also. Molly went to that, and we went to the opera, so she was bummed that we didn't go with her, but you know how it is.
So many options.
Yeah, so many things.
Especially in the summer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They start piling up on top of one another.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's only beginning.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
It's early on.
So, Bruce, the museum had a big gala, and what else is going on?
Well, it could have been called a gala.
Gala?
But it could be called
a gala.
Gala. Or gala.
Or gala. Gala. In Australia.
That's the label you put the emphasis on.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But it was great fun. I had the honor of recognizing Captain Joe for his over a quarter century of work with the Point Robinson Lighthouse. And also my wife, Pam, wore the dress that she graduated from college in 1969. And it's sort of like, man, that's 56, 57 years ago. And it's sort of like, she can still fit in it.
Wow.
I mean, I can't even fit in my last year's stuff.
I saw one guy wearing a military jacket.
Yeah,
and
right,
I said, there's no way in bloody hell I would be able to put mine on. Might even get one arm in, you know.
But also, busy week. We're putting the crab boat in the water this week. So getting it out of storage, doing all the stuff, getting ready for crab season, which starts, you know, the Monday after the 4th of July. So whatever that day is, I think the 6th or 7th of July, we'll have 6 weeks of crabbing on Vashon Island, which is those Dungeness better watch out, right? And then it's interesting. My grandsons are... one's 8 and one's 12, and the youngest one is 4. But the 8-year-old is just in the middle of this sort of the end of baseball season, and he's playing pitcher coach baseball. So, and they instituted this new system so that if a kid strikes out, they bring out the tee and give the kid a chance to hit the ball with the tee.
Oh, that's a good deal.
Which means the games go on forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's great, you know. And then
I wouldn't mind getting one of those in life.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Bring out the tee.
Support there, right? Yeah. So, and then he's got a dance recital on Thursday. Boy. He is just big into dance, as well as baseball and soccer and basketball. He's an interesting kid in that sense. And then my 12-year-old approached me this week. He's looking for a job this summer, which is an interesting sort of shift in a kid's mindset. All of a sudden, man, if I do work, I get money. I can buy things. Yeah. It's an interesting shift that takes place right there.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. But I'm very excited about the crab boat. And of course, Vashona. There's actually a boat show this weekend at Docton Park.
Oh.
King County sponsoring sort of the opening of the new marina at Docton Park. And so there's going to be the Odyssey, the Boy Scout boat from Tacoma, is going to be over. And they're going to be doing all kinds of knot tying demos and that kind of stuff. And there'll be, 7-8 boats, I think, from Quartermaster Yacht Club, some classic boats as well as newer boats. So drop down to Docton Park.
On Saturday,
I think, from 11 to 3 or something like that.
Cool. So, you know, we have this post here in the middle of our table.
Yes.
You could demonstrate some of those knots.
Knot tying.
Right here on that.
I do a great hangman's knot if you want a demo.
Why are you looking at me?
Could you ask?
Yeah. the legal aspects of it. You know,
you did mention that crabbing season, and I think maybe the tribal crabbing season opened up earlier.
About a month ago.
Yeah. Right. Because there's more things to run over now when you're rowing out in the bay. Yeah, okay. Check on that. Yeah,
right. Yeah. I did have a question because we had a friend come over before she went off to the gala, and we were just wondering, so, you know, last year was 60s, 70s, 80s. You're going to catch up with ourselves pretty soon.
Well, actually, that night they took a vote whether to do the 80s, yeah, or the 40s. Oh. Because we started with the 20s, and then we jumped to the 50s and 60s and 70s. You know, and so the question, do we do the 80s or we do the 40s? It was overwhelming just from the crowd. They want to do the 1940s.
Well,
all right.
The music from the 40s was awesome.
Portage Phil.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic.
It'll be great.
So it'll be good.
Just look in the mirror.
Where is that zoot suit?
Who took that vote?
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Where is that zoot suit?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, hey, Amy, how's things going with you?
Yeah, pretty well. Let's see. Friday also went to the opera. Very impressed. Anita Spritzer as the witch, as the gingerbread house witch, like really lit up the stage.
A drag queen witch.
Yeah.
She was awesome.
Fantastic voice. I mean, you don't really think often drag queens don't even sing much anymore, but sung and had an operatic voice.
Indeed.
Was able to pull off the part, but really brought an entirely new dynamic and just some really interesting, thoughtful dynamics around, you know, just kind of the politics of it. And it brought a new dimension, I thought.
What got me was
the
hair and the shoes.
Yep.
That was just beyond belief.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, really great. First half was good. Second half, really just kind of the whole stage lit up.
Really picked up.
Really big energy. So really
those children came
out
with the blonde wig.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So good staging. Yeah. Yeah. Kudos to the opera. Before that, earlier that night, I went to the softball banquet, which was fantastic. End of the season. Everybody had to eat at the same table. So they had 10 kids, 11 kids around one table. Really, really great end of the year. And then, drum roll, please. This weekend, the new Blackstone arrived. So, Ben, I bought a used Blackstone off Facebook a few years ago, maybe 5 years ago, and been getting along with that. And the igniter went out. Flat top grill. Mm. So outdoor flat top grill. Fantastic. And the old one was stainless steel. And I think this one is cast iron. And I'm curious why they made the change, because it's obviously different cooking surface, right? Really like it in some ways, but it is loud. Right, scraping your metal across that cast iron versus scraping your metal across that stainless steel, right? And you work with them both ways. Actually, I think cast iron is a little bit more fidgety in terms of keeping it seasoned and maintenance.
Sure.
So, but all that said, amazing, because all the little, all the little grill lights were all perfect and everything worked when you turn the knobs. This one has a built-in warmer and an air fryer built in.
Whoa.
I mean, it's just, the bells and whistles.
Wow.
So
to make a latte?
I mean, you can bake in the air fryers. So, you could bake some cornbread to go with the barbecue you got going on. And we did, I do smash burgers and then we do housemade, as it were, veggie burgers for Aaron, which are delicious. But you can cook anything and everything. I will keep folks updated on this new cast iron iteration. Yeah. I'm skeptical, but we'll find out more.
Wow, we just got a great review there, didn't we?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have loved the Blackstone, but we will see about this whole cast iron thing.
Have you ever had a Traeger or a...
You know, I'm not, I haven't gotten into the smoking as much just because Aaron's vegetarian. And so,
not the meat thing.
Yeah. And my friend Riley has, you name a grill thing. She's got she's got the Traeger smoker, but she's, I think, got a cold smoker now. She's got the big, easy air fryer. You can air fry a turkey in it,
oh my
does
gosh.
Racks of ribs in it. She's got the Blackstone, she's got the Weber. So, you know, she's got the full
trap set.
Yeah. And then our friend Susie's got this King Disc, which is basically like a wok. It's like a ceramic coated portable wok. It's just got a little scissor fold stand and the wok thing. You take it anywhere, propane, and it makes the best chicken.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, we've found like which gadgets make the best witches, and man, chicken off that King Disc.
I'm envisioning all of this lined up at the Village Green on some weekend day.
That's right. I'm waiting for it.
Okay. Yeah. We'll take a look at that.
Yeah, we take our grilling seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome. But that cast iron, you know, has more thermal conductivity or more thermal capacity, right? Yeah. So maybe it's like a slower increase or decrease in the heat.
Well, which is not necessarily what you want, right?
Well, sometimes you want responsiveness, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, like it did. I mean, that puppy got cooking, right? Like for a nice sear. Mm-hmm. I mean, any kind of meat, you want a nice sear on it, so.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. All right. Hey, Craig Bellis is here with us. Of course, Craig, how's your week been?
It was great. I did nothing. No, I mean, nothing compared with, that's kind of nice sometimes,
yeah,
isn't it?
Round of applause.
I was going to say, that's kind of nice. No, you know, it's a regular thing, except for the Heritage Gala. That was a lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that. And we had a partial Brown briefly table with Truman and Bruce and myself there, and a couple other guests. And I'm sorry that you two couldn't make it.
Yeah,
but yeah. We carried on.
Yeah, you carried on. Yeah,
we soldiered on.
Yeah, I have one fundraiser a weekend.
I was going to say, that's my rule. I don't know, it kind of goes on and on. Had my guitar lesson again with Daryl Redeker, which I enjoy thoroughly. Last lesson was a bit of a fiasco. You know, sometimes you have your ups and downs, and this particular time my fingers weren't working. Yeah. You know, it was just everything was going all to hell.
That happens. Yep.
But he's a very patient instructor and told me to get out of his house. No, he didn't.
So he probably didn't tell you to like just go for the drumming then. Strings aren't working, go for the drumming.
Just sort of tap on the outside of the thing.
Okay, yeah, I've heard that done.
Yeah, well, that exactly. A little bit of good news. Just this morning, I was looking at some news. Our children live in Ashland, which is like 8 miles from the California border, Ashland, Oregon. And yesterday, I think it was the very first condor in 120 years flew up from California into Oregon, right by Ashland, almost to Medford, and turned around and went down the Smith River, down to the ocean. But that was a big deal. They have never seen a condor. No living individual has seen a condor in Oregon.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Unless it's a result of global warming and the temperatures moving on up. But there used to be condors in Oregon, so.
Okay.
That could be
the return of a thing.
The return of the condor.
Nice. Awesome. Well, let's see. A couple things for me. I know my material science class did not prepare me for repatching an inflatable dinghy. I can tell you that much. Yeah, you know, it's one thing to have a hole in a inflatable dinghy tube and just to put a patch on it and call it good. But when the patch fails and like 7 years later and you have to like repatch it, all of a sudden, it's like
that's
archaeological
a whole new
game, dig.
Isn't
it? Yeah. And the interesting thing about that adhesive, sometimes, you know, sandpaper works. But then it warms up, you know, the friction warms up, and then the glue starts to melt, and then it turns into sort of a slurry. Mm. And then it's like, maybe I should just, like, scrape it off with a putty knife. And so I've been trying all kinds of different varieties of ways to get my inflatable dinghy reinflated because we think it's important to have one on our little boat trip. So, that's where I've been spending a fair amount of my time, actually.
Have you explored the world of infomercial magic tape?
You know, I have actually heard that some of that tape, Gorilla Tape, is supposed to work pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so we're gonna go with conventional, though.
Okay.
But
okay.
I think I'll pack along some Gorilla Tape just in case.
I was just going to think, that might be a good thing to have with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a good plan.
Yeah.
It's a good thought, Amy. Good thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, duct tape, various adhesives, and, a flotation device in case all else fails.
It's definitely like a, claims to be a marine grade style, Yeah, I don't know if you've specifically explored the infomercial product itself.
Yeah, well, there's a number of them, but no, I haven't actually.
Okay.
I did actually come across though that reference. So, and then something also about the spray-on stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, by the guy who makes a boat out of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the thing, right? It should work perfectly.
Yeah.
So maybe I need a can of that before I head north.
Yeah. What are you doing next weekend though? I could see just Kevin assembles a quote unquote boat, mm-hmm. sprays it down with the stuff and get on out in the sound.
You know, I could make my life much more simple.
If you film it, we can show it to you live right here on Voice of Vashon.
Hey, there you go. Now that is raising the bar.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I still have, you know, a little while to go here in terms of getting all prepared for the voyage. So you might see that.
Right on.
Yes. Stay tuned. Right on. 101.9 KVSH.
So much.
Voice
so
of
much
Vashon.
Coming your way.
Exactly. All right. Well, we also, of course, have history on our side. So there's a number of things that happened on this day in history. It's kind of phenomenal. P.T. Barnum's first tour of the United States in 1835. Mm-hmm. We also have Alexander Graham Bell's first sound transmission in 1875. So thank goodness for now radio, right? He helped pave the way for that kind of stuff. Not maybe so famous, Velveeta cheese is first unleashed on the public in 1928. I don't know. Maybe there's some Velveeta fans here.
I prefer cheese.
Depends on the maybe. Use. Okay. Depends on the use.
I have to.
Okay. Velveeta and Rotella mixed is a great dip for chips.
Okay. Did you say Nutella or Rotella?
Rotella.
Oh, Rotella.
Yeah. The
Nutella might work too.
I can't go there.
Okay. Well, chocolate and cheese, right?
Yum.
Well, I will tell you that Cheese Whiz and potatoes. You know, you would do whipped potatoes and cheese Whiz. Awesome.
It's just oil and seasoning.
Yeah.
And plastic.
Well,
and plastic.
Oil.
Non-organic
oil.
They use cheese Whiz.
Yeah.
Well, see, for now, for 98 years, you can get your Velveeta on. So, you know, today is the day. Stop by, you know, one of the grocers on Vashon, pick up some Velveeta and see where your imagination can take
you. There you go.
The sky's the limit.
Patch a diggy?
I have a feeling it would work until it gets too warm.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay, but you still have the Velveeta.
Right,
so
that's right.
So it's a bonus. Yeah.
Win-win.
Exactly. All right. Also, in 1953, the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II in Westminster Abbey, so many years ago. Also, 1966, this is relevant to some of the news we're going to be talking about today. The first soft lunar landing, the U.S. Surveyor 1 in 1966. Going along chronologically, in 1977, New Jersey allows casino gambling in Atlantic City, enabling the current President Trump to lose over $1 billion in the casino industry.
Wow.
Thank you, New Jersey, for allowing that to happen.
I didn't think that was possible.
How can anybody lose money in a casino? I mean, other than the client.
Yeah, really.
I don't know. When you set your mind to setting the mark high.
I guess.
Yeah, there you go. Somebody had to do it. 1979, Los Angeles Mayor Ed Bradley signs the first gay rights bill. So, a milestone in history. And in 2003, the European Union launches its first mission to Mars, the Mars Express probe. And both of those lunar and Mars expeditions are going to feature in our intergalactic news today. So it's very thematic.
I just got a vision of that Pigs in Space intro from the Muppets.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Well, you know, we may see more Pigs in Space because, you know, there's a trend going.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. But before we do, today is June 2nd. It is National Leave the Office Early Day. So we're here. And hopefully people left the office and can listen to the Brown Briefly. It's also National Rocky Road Day. And it is also National Rotisserie Chicken Day.
Oh, now there you go.
Mm-hmm. So a little rotisserie chicken with your Velveeta and then some Rocky
Road.
You got
a rotisserie on that, that barbecue?
Riley's looking at getting a rotisserie set up. Yeah, right. Over an open flame. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Keep pushing the limit. Mm-hmm. Pushing the envelope. All right, so...
Give Costco a run for their money.
I don't think we can hit that $5 chicken mark, though, unless we start stealing chickens from people. What was that? Was that a coyote? No. No, that was just Amy.
Okay, more video surveillance of the chicken coops. Okay, I got it. Let's see. Intergalactic news. There is actually some interesting news because is anyone here ready to go to Mars? No.
No, Mars. We know some people we'd like to send to Mars.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Could we come up with a million of them?
Because we still live on Mars.
No, I'm sorry.
Why?
I'm sorry. You don't need a million people.
Okay, but here's the deal. So Elon Musk, as we know and love, his SpaceX Starship mega rocket is apparently the foundation upon which the SpaceX IPO, initial public offering, is built. And the last launch apparently was generally successful, but they did lose a part in the Gulf of Mexico. Mm. So, you know, it went sort of off track. But most of the rocket went where it was intended to go. So I think, you know, maybe Elon's onto something. But from the company's regulatory filings with his initial public offering, it kind of gives you some insight into the hoped-for business propositions and success that Elon is after. So, for example, Elon wants to put 100 terawatts of orbiting computing data centers into space. You know, that's like 1,000 times what we currently have terrestrial capacity for that. But he's not going to stop there.
Wait a minute. How is he going to power that?
Uh-huh.
Solar. Question.
Quote, unquote, solar. Wait, how many football fields of solar? 100 football fields of solar panels?
I think he's sending nuclear up into space.
Yeah. No, he's saying solar.
I know.
Insane amount of solar.
Yeah. Huge, huge solar panels. Yeah, right. But the processors themselves, I understand that the processing would be done in the data centers that are orbiting in space. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues with terrestrial data centers, you have to cool them off, which takes a tremendous amount of water, which is a pretty important resource for us here on the planet, right? So in space, you can just radiate that heat out to deep space.
Well, but it's a vacuum, so you have to have a medium for radiating it.
I did actually look up my thermal transmission books, and there's three different types, and it's conductive, convective, and radiant. Mm-hmm. And so radiating heat directly just off into the deep space is a thing. You don't have to have another atom nearby to carry the heat.
The convective one is the one you're talking about. That's the one where you need the air.
Mm-hmm. So it's just,
but it's a good question.
It would have to be directly exposed,
in order
to effectively radiate.
They said they're going to put the biggest radiators ever built on these satellites orbiting data centers.
Cool. Yeah, cool. Sure.
Right.
Big fins.
Big fins. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, all the processing takes place up there. And the important part is the information, the result of the processing, presumably, right? Because that's what you have to now beam back down to the planet. So not all of the satellites have to actually be able to have communications to the Earth. They'd have to talk to each other, which is no small feat. But so some technical challenges, right?
I mean, theoretically safer to put nuclear fusion in space in case it goes so terribly wrong?
Interesting question.
If fusion is less of an issue than fission.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, with fusion, it could take out the whole planet. But, you know, I mean, it's just a small thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
I don't know.
There is no fusion, of course, to speak of. Other than the sun itself.
Right. There's also absolutely no way to see clear to the size of solar panels.
That's true.
Like, there's about theoretically, I think, in the same place.
Yeah.
Scientifically, is the development of solar panels that big and nuclear fusion?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Close. Well, there is nothing to disturb them. There's no wind. So once the panel's out there, you know, it just sort of hovers along. So they got that going for them. But Elon's not going to stop there. We talked about, you know, the Mars Express probe from the EU in 2003. But Elon does, apparently, in his initial public offering filing documents, talks about building a Martian city of over 1 million people. So what's down with that?
All right, so here's the deal. You don't need 1 million people. You have the 5,500 rule in the conservation standard. Mm. If you have 50 individuals, that's 25 pairs, that's the minimum viable population for not getting into the whole inbreeding depression over a short period of time.
Okay, right.
Over a long period of time, there's more of an issue. But the 500 individuals, that's 25 breeding pairs, that threshold of a population, you can generate new genetic mutations fast enough to replace those that are lost. So you're safeguarding the species against changing environment and disease. Mm. So really all you need are 25 breeding pairs of people.
Why does anyone want to live on Mars?
Well, you know, if you do the terraforming, it might be really pretty. And who knows?
Have they found convertible water?
Well, yeah, there's water there.
Yeah.
There's water.
Enough can the and with the science to convert it. And again, why? Like literally you step outside the door. Oops.
Oops. Sorry.
I can step outside the door now and it's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that I just thought I would point that out.
That's
about
important
the million.
To have. Yeah. If you could eventually get to a million.
You would.
That way,
that's
yeah,
the
eventually.
Point. That's the point.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about the inbreeding if you have shakers that you sent.
Yeah.
There is that.
Yeah. But like, is there resource extraction he's trying to get to? Like literally, why colonize Mars?
Yeah. Well, because we've burned up everything here.
So. But it's not there. There's no trees.
No, not yet. You terraform it.
Oh, there's millions of people who moved to Phoenix.
What are you talking about? Right. Not a tree in sight.
I mean, true, but like, how do you terraform a planet that is always, how cold is it on Mars?
Oh, it gets pretty cold.
And pretty hot.
Yeah.
And pretty hot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I get if there's resource extraction, that's why we went west, right? We were like, hey, let's find some more resources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the idea.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Amy, on this because, you know, if you put all the costs and the energy and the time into actually relocating to Mars, we have to bring a pod to live in with you. Let's just build pods on Earth if we need pods on Earth.
Right? There you go.
I mean, so that's another way to go. Think of it. Yeah. Love our planet. Just stay here. Let's invest in this.
Yeah. Flash poll. How many Briefleys want to move to Mars?
Looks like zero.
Yeah. While we're still on radio, zero.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing is I don't think you're going to be able to get back.
There is that. Right. Once you get there, you're there.
It's a one-way trip.
Bring the machinery to build another rocket, and you might find, you know, fuel. Mm-hmm. And how long would that take? Those 25 people have to get busy
procreating
to get
right
enough
now.
People to go out there
that's
and do
right.
mineral
get that population up.
Right.
That's
right.
Can we nominate people?
Yeah.
Who would you put on the top of your list, Bruce?
Well, I can think of several.
It could be like Australia. You know, I mean,
exactly. Just send all the convicts.
Botany Bay. There you go.
Also, as the breeder here, 25 people constantly giving birth on Mars. No.
So you have to send the healthcare staff.
Yeah.
That's right.
The 25.
Yeah.
Who goes first?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. This could get complicated.
Chicken and the egg.
So who's going to now buy into SpaceX in their IPO? You ready to buy stock?
Mm-mm. No, thank you.
Are they saying $2 trillion? Right, that's what they're saying for it?
You know, I haven't heard recently, but yeah, well, it's going to make Musk a trillionaire.
There's lots of stocks out there that can make you a lot of money, but I wouldn't own them in a heartbeat. No.
Okay, well, I'm glad we got that sorted out.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I came across with Musk and SpaceX is he is merging his SpaceX company with his XAI company, so his artificial intelligence company. And the reason he's doing that, apparently, SpaceX is losing money rapidly. But Starlink, another Musk company, which does basically global communications, is making money. Between the two of them, they're only losing $2 billion a year.
Oh, okay.
So, for a multi-billionaire, it's chicken feet.
Nothing a bridge loan couldn't handle.
Right. Yeah. But I have a feeling that the AI startup is another sort of maybe trickery to get people to buy into the SpaceX, which is losing money, because AI, of course.
Well, it's the hottest thing on the planet.
It's absolutely. Got a guaranteed moneymaker, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. So Bruce, you've brought up AI in the past on the show. Mm-hmm. But here's another element, not just rocket ships, but humanoids, robots. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if people have, if you go check out like XPeng, which is XPeng, a Chinese company, they're iron, iron, humanoid robot. XPeng's a Chinese car company developing AI-enabled humanoid robots. Mm-hmm. Chinese companies have a humanoid robot face that looks almost too human, is one of the quotes I came across. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of videos out there.
Be careful when you look those up online.
You should
exactly.
Cautious. Yes.
You might get a site that has an X in it somewhere.
Okay. So, Bruce, I wanted to just check with this sort of, as history goes forward and we now think about artificial intelligence and we think about humanoids who really look pretty human, What's your expectation of where this is going?
Well, you always have to think about unintended consequences. I'm always reminded that Henry Ford, when he developed the sort of mass production of automobiles, he never really conceived that he was going to change the mating patterns of American youth when he developed the automobile. But he did.
But guess what?
And so it's sort of that concept of looking at, well, yeah, they can welcome you into a hotel, they can check you in, they can sweep the floors, lots of things they can do. But what are the unintended consequences? Mm-hmm. And that's what you just don't know.
Just think of the Terminator movie.
I'll be back.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's fascinating to me, this sort of struggle in the courts that's going on between Anthropic?
And
ChatGPT, mm-hmm. sort of that company. And sort of like, you know, who's going to determine the future of what AI can do? Who's going to put in the guardrails, if you will? And you go back to Isaac Asimov, you know, with his
I, Robot,
you know, and sort of the first rules of first rule of robotics is that a robot cannot harm a human being. Yeah. You know, how do you program that in? And how do you make sure it doesn't get deprogrammed, you know? Yeah. And mm-hmm. then what is harm? You know, mm-hmm.
exactly.
And then you get into the unintended consequences. So it's a deep pit. And I don't like being on the edge looking into it.
There's some interesting challenges that I've read about in the AI world, and the AI is developed by oftentimes software engineers, right? Mm-hmm. So it turns out AI is amazingly capable of finding faults in software, which, you know, software engineers, that's one of the things that they do. So why wouldn't it be good at that? To the point that also tunneling into software systems, apparently it's quite capable. So it's the hacker tool of choice, right? So if we think about preserving these systems that run on software, trying to protect them and preserve them from terrorist attacks and things like that, you know, there's a vulnerability there.
And you have to look at the converse of that. You know, AI is very good at looking into systems and finding flaws because it's designed by a bunch of people who look into systems and design, you know, and try and find flaws. How good are all the computer programmers you know at human interactions?
Good point.
You know, it's sort of like, maybe I'll have some psychologists designing these things rather than programmers.
One of the things that that you had on my my section up here was the move from air travel to space travel, and this all relates. 64 years ago is when I first sold it in an airplane. And if you looked at the panel of that airplane that I flew 64 years ago and look at the panel that I retired flying, and it is mind-boggling, mm-hmm. the change in technology. And if that change happened over 64 years, imagine at the speed that we're improving technology with AI, what is the next 64 years going to look like? And I think it's going to be pretty mind-boggling.
And Boeing AI may catch up with Airbus.
Okay. Don't be overly optimistic.
If it ain't Boeing, I ain't going. No, come on.
We can only hope. Yeah. But you did mention bringing in psychologists and other people who have more of a human interest. And maybe our capitalist world is conditioning us to this world of AI, because people, our listeners, maybe have seen this advertisement on television where Chase Bank commercial shows a human sort of starting out in the morning with, you know, jumping into a car that's a driverless taxi, and then going to get a cup of coffee that's served by a robot, and finally walking into a Chase Bank where, oh my goodness, a human being actually walks across the floor and welcomes them into the bank. Turns out that it's a woman. Kind of interesting. But, you know, maybe we're being conditioned and we don't even know it.
Oh, we are. Oh, yeah. There's no question about it. You know, I've told, I think you, my fellow Brieflys, about my experience with AI recently in purchasing the van for the Voice of Vashon. Mm-hmm. And I think back on that, and I feel foolish because I kept communicating with this this computer-generated individual, but they were as gracious and as responsive, more so than any used car salesman I've ever run across.
That's how you should have known.
I know.
Yeah, yeah, that was your first clue.
But it didn't dawn on me until after we discovered that it was all AI that I just thought to myself, oh, that's right. It's no wonder this person knew all about me and knew all about the voice of Vashon. They had access to all of those banks of information in a split second. So,
Well, I have to tell you something I've experienced recently. You know that the airport, the King County Airport District, is a taxing district, but we have elected not to tax. I mean, we could charge up to 75 cents per thousand, but because
make lots of friends.
Well, because of the $5.90 cap on junior taxing districts, it doesn't make sense to do. I mean, we're so far down the list that we probably wouldn't get any money. So we chose not to do that. I mean, it just makes sense. But I typed into the search engine just what is the priority of the junior taxing districts? Mm-hmm. And it knew King County Airport District number one, Vashon. It knew all of that. I mean, it was amazing. I was boggled, really was. And the information that it generated was amazing. And like you said, it's going out and getting stuff that's pretty obscure. But it gave me the RCW that was, that listed what we could do and all of that. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, there's concerns that AI will put people out of work. But I think there's maybe a new job opportunity with AI. It's the AI support group counseling sessions that you need to, just to...
VYFS, Vashon Youth and Family Services. There
okay, get started now, because here we are. Well, hey, on national news, under the title Trumpian Justice Payments for Perps, The Economist used those headline words to describe Trump's $1.8 billion settlement, otherwise known as a slush fund. And I know, Craig, I've seen you with furrowed brow regarding even how this came to pass. But you want to fill our listeners in and us on what transpired and maybe what's next?
It's outrageous. I mean, it's just absolutely preposterous. I've never seen anything like it. The Trump brings a $10 billion lawsuit against the IRS for releasing some of his tax returns. And then backs off and says, "Well, we're gonna settle this case, and we're gonna settle it by creating this $1.8 billion settlement arrangement, which I had control as president. I pick the people who decide who's going to get the money. I want the money to go to the people who have been injured by the Biden administration." Et cetera. It goes on and on, of course, and all of the people who, ran into the Capitol are lining up to get there. I think Comey actually is lining up to get his as well.
I was hoping.
People on the other side who are saying, I was damaged. I'm the only one, I was really damaged by the weaponization of, but that's not, of course, where the money would be going. So when you have a federal case going on, and you enter into a settlement in the middle of the case, the judge has to review the settlement and has to approve it. And I think that some people in the administration recognized that it was not going to pass muster before that judge, and that judge was not, the woman judge was not going to approve it. So they said, well, we're going to drop the case. We'll drop the case. And we'll enter into this cool agreement, and my supporters will all be real happy about this because some of them will make money, and others will think, well, yeah, the president's not going to take $10 billion out of my tax dollars; he's only going to take $1.8
billion. Yeah, what a discount!
Yeah, what a discount! Exactly,
only 20%.
And then to make a long story short, you have a whole slew of federal judges who put together a letter, if you will, to the judge, who now is no longer on the case. And it says, Judge, you might want to look at this. I think that a fraud has been committed upon you in this matter, and you have the jurisdiction and the right to reopen the case and to look to see who was involved in this whole bit of bad shenanigans as opposed to good shenanigans. And that's what the judge has done. And the writing, I think, is handwriting's on the wall. And Trump has basically said, "Well, I don't think we're going to drop this one and move on."
No,
we'll see.
Even if he drops it, as I understand from last night, that if fraud was done, which it sounds like it was, he's still liable and he's not going to get out of it.
No. The court under Civil Rule 11.
Yeah.
Really has the authority to sanction not only the attorneys for their misconduct in the case, but in several instances, the parties. And he was a party to this matter. As a matter of fact, he was both parties.
Doesn't he have immunity?
No, not in this case.
That's right. No, that's right.
I heard last night they were talking about it, that this immunity that he's given by the SCOTUS is not applicable to this particular.
It's not a criminal. It's not a criminal matter. It's a civil judicial matter.
Sure.
It's the court's supervisory authority that's being.
But isn't the fraud acted. Isn't the fraud criminal?
Well, fraud could support a criminal indictment.
Right?
Yeah. But there we would perhaps run into immunity. Hmm. But independent of that, the judge has the ability to do any number of major sanctions.
Which they'll ignore.
Well, they'll be hanging over their heads for several years. The statute of limitations. I'm not sure the statute of limitations runs on a court order like that. But I hadn't checked that one out.
Wow.
So amazingly creative way to utilize the judicial system, it sounds like.
Yeah, I wonder if it was really thought out or if it kind of came about willy-nilly.
I don't think it was thought out.
That requires, you know, a couple of chess moves ahead, or in this instance, a checker move in advance.
Yes.
And I'm not real confident that the current administration is capable of doing that.
So what are your thoughts about, you know, we kind of look at this and think it's an atrocity, although settlements are a common thing in law, right? But this
97% of all federal cases that are filed are settled before they go to trial.
Yeah, so you can make the argument that maybe their thought was, oh, this is just something that we can convince people is a normal thing, right? It's a settlement. But at this juncture, it sounds like there's a couple options. One would be to overturn this ruling, or to disable this before it even gets started. And the other is to manage it. What do you think the prospects are going forward? How likely is it that it can be overturned? And what's the likelihood of being able to manage this slush fund?
Manage the slush? No,
put guardrails around where the money gets distributed.
I don't think the court wants to get into a situation where they're going to start micromanaging or listen to argument on the micromanagement of this slush fund. I think mm-hmm. that what would typically happen is the court after and they're getting briefing on this. The court has asked for, you know, who knew about this? Who approved this? Mm-hmm. Who was there anybody who didn't approve it? You know, let's find out who that is. Mm-hmm. That you were aware of and why. You know, so there's a lot of digging going on here, but the court could very well, now that it's reasserting its jurisdiction, its power, it could very well say, no, there will be no settlement on these terms at all.
Okay.
I think that's the most likely thing, although, like I said, mm-hmm. I think the handwriting on the wall is that that's going to happen. So the president is saying, well, let's just back out of that so we don't lose another one. Mm-hmm. But there is always the issue of the sanctions that may apply.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And
You don't cure a fraud by saying, oh, okay. Never mind.
Sorry. Now we have the whack-a-mole problem, right? This one goes away. The other thing I thought was very creative also, states that do have a state income tax could declare 100% tax any distribution of slush fund money. Mm-hmm. The other thought was, I'm not sure how many people exactly got put in jail due to January 6th
And you know, basically all the people who beat up the Capitol and tried to kill Mike Pence and things like that. But if it was 1,800 of them, they'd all get $1 million apiece, right?
Wow.
Well, yeah. If that was the extent of who was applying and that they divvied it up, that would So it kind of the irony, the absurdity of it is just overwhelming. Here, you break into the Capitol, you are tried and convicted by a court or a jury,
and pled guilty in some cases.
Many cases, they appealed, they lost all those appeals, and then finally they are en masse pardoned by Trump, and now they want to. He wants to recompense them for their trouble. Yes. I mean, what's the message?
White dude's gonna white dude. message most folks have been getting for the last thousand years.
And if I want to supplement my income, maybe I should go off and break into the Capitol again or something.
But only for Trump.
That's right. Of course.
But I can't think of no better segue, Amy, than what you just said, because E. Jean Carroll is in the news again, and vindictive prosecution, perhaps.
Right.
So, at any rate, you have certainly been able to raise the voice and raise our listeners' awareness about how women are treated in this country. And so what's your take on this recent Department of Justice investigation that asserts that E. Jean Carroll, who was awarded $88 million in payments after the courts found she was defamed and sexually assaulted by the current president, basically they're saying she now committed perjury during her civil lawsuit. What do you think?
Take it to court, right? Like the most dangerous time for anyone, for women is to, come forward. It's when you report that you're being hit or when you report whatever's going on, right? That's the most dangerous time. And then you are in perpetuity in danger, right? Because you've upset the apple cart, you've taken action. And so, this is just kind of, I think, a pattern, a very recognized pattern writ large, right? It's, of course, part of the same pattern of just absolute abuse of any kind of public process that we have, right? Like this whole slush fund is the biggest fleecing of the taxpayers since Doge last year. Was that just last year? Yeah. Right? Like it's the biggest fleecing of the year so far. With E. Jean Carroll, of course, that's just it's what happens to so many women, writ large, is they come forward and this happens and it's on this national stage. But not shocking, not surprising, how many other women are look at that and say, well, why would I ever come forward? Or, especially like I live in a county where I know the judges are Trump supporters, right? Yeah. I live in you take this thing writ large and then bring it all the way down to Fulton County, Alabama, right? Georgia. And just think about that gal who's living out somewhere in the sticks, right? Who knows what kind of justice she's quote unquote going to get. And then this is just sanctified literally by the state, right? Yep. So Texas, let's take a look at Texas and Mr. Paxton, right? And what he served, a month for his assault, right? For what he did, because his cronies got him out and the MAGA kids got him out. And every woman in Texas is looking at that and knowing exactly what it means to be a woman in Texas. Right.
Right. So in other words, go to jamestallarico.org and donate money to Pacton's. I'm not sure if that's actually the right website.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is, it's interesting to see, what's his Graham Plattner up in Maine, what's going on, Tallarico, what's going on, right? The sort of very populist. Those two are interesting contrasts to me, right? Because Plattner sort of got that masculine, right? And he seems to have gone on a journey, right, around his sort of, how he displays his masculinity, but you can still kind of feel a little bit hyper-masculinity.
The fisherman?
Yeah, right, the fisherman. Yeah. And then you got Tallarico, right, who's kind of this new school populist who's got this, revivalist message and populist message, and both of them are kind of doing well in places where you could see, either of them doing well or not well, right? Mm. You could swap them out and think maybe that was a better cultural fit, but it is interesting to see those folks come forward. Now, what happens? You know, are they going to come forward? But, you know, with E. Jean Carroll, what happens now is not important. The message has been sent, right?
True.
Speak up, you will be punished.
Yeah. And it's a message. It's not a new message.
Oh, I mean,
you know, if you lived in the South in the 1940s, well, from the 1890s on under Jim Crow, it was the same kind of thing. You know, if you were black, your voice was essentially suppressed. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, you could make a complaint to the sheriff, but the sheriff was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. You know, you could go to court, but the courts and the juries were all white.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, so it's not a new pattern by any means. But it's a pattern that sort of suppresses dissent, suppresses opposition, suppresses individual freedoms.
I think we've talked about this before. What's sort of going on at the federal level is just what has been happening to women and people of color. Mm-hmm. You know, definitely under the kind of Western world that we have lived in.
Yeah, the abuse of process here is unbelievable. We're finding out from the Chicago case that the prosecutors there did not turn over to the judge the actual grand jury testimony or grand jury arguments that the prosecutors made before the grand jury, and all the misconduct that the federal prosecutors engaged in. It's rampant.
Mm-hmm. So one other, just before we leave E. Jean to wrap up our show, because down to the last few minutes, I was really impressed with her attorney, because she not only won one defamation case, she won two defamation cases, because the president came right back and said some slanderous things, and her attorney was like, bring it on.
Yeah.
I haven't heard yet whether her attorney is like, okay, round three?
Yeah.
You know, is this round three? I don't know, Craig. Yeah. What do you think? Is
I don't know. There comes a point where it costs a lot of money to bring these lawsuits, and mm-hmm. a lot of time and a lot of energy and emotional energy. I think E. Jean probably could use a break.
I would think so, but she's under investigation now. So
I know.
The lawsuit is there, right?
She's in it. She's got
she
it.
Is. So now it's
might
like,
as well strike back and put the thumb on Trump again.
I'm going for the vindictive prosecution number three.
Yeah, so. But then again, why would you ever, you know, if you know this is what's going to happen to you for drawing a boundary,
right?
Why would you ever draw a boundary if you just will be subject to ceaseless harassment? Right. Why would you ever draw a boundary? It's just easier to live with it.
Yes, and we need to get billionaires to rethink their strategy. We talked about Mr. Haywood and his initiatives last show. Okay. Or to show before last. All right. Well, hey, just wrap up a little bit of local news. National Learn to Row Day is this Saturday, June 6th at the Jensen Point Boathouse from 10:30 to 1:30. Drop in anytime during that time. You'll have a chance to tour the boathouse. You'll have a chance to take a look at a rowing machine and learn a little bit about how to improve your rowing stroke on the machine. And then weather permitting, of course.
There. Yes.
We're looking forward to seeing Mr. Bellis show up. And there's, of course, a number of other folks who have expressed interest. And then, weather permitting, I have my fingers crossed we can actually get out on the water, because I've been to a National Learn to Row where you got to sit in a boat and just row on shore with two people holding, but it's not nearly as much fun.
No.
So there's that. So, and also put on your calendars Wednesday, June 10th, 7 p.m. at the Vashon United Methodist Church. The Indivisible Vashon Monthly Meeting will take place, and the focus is on protecting immigrant rights during the FIFA World Cup, where we expect an increased presence of ICE in our neighborhoods. So important actions you can take to support our immigrant community. Let's see, looking ahead, Amy, you're hosting next week. What do you have lined up?
That would be Chief McLaughlin, I believe.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, VIFR.
Looking
talk about
that.
Wildland urban fire interface, among many other things.
Ooh,
good.
You know, there's a number of wildfire related actions in the King County Strategic Climate Action Plan.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I will dust off that information. All right. So thank you for staying with us today at the Voice of Vashon Gene Bosch Studio with the Brown Briefly. For Truman, Bruce, Craig, and Amy, I'm Kevin. We thank you for listening. We will look forward to you joining us again next week on the Brown Briefly.